What's going on, everybody? I'm Johnny Brooke. Welcome back to episode 21 of the Crafted Podcast, a podcast all about making stuff by hand, woodworking, metalworking, electronics, and more. We put out new shows every Wednesday on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, pretty much everywhere podcasts are available. And we also live stream every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. If you want to learn a little bit more about us, check us out on our website, craftedpodcast.com. We also just started a new Patreon page. If you want to support us, it's patreon.com/craftedpodcast. And let me go ahead and introduce my co-hosts, James Wright from Wood by Wright. What's going on, James?
Oh, not too much, but thank you so much for asking.
Again, with the creepy intro as always. And Zach Herberholz from ZH Fabrications. What's up, Zach?
How's it going?
And last but certainly not least, we have a guest on the show tonight, the legendary, the godfather of, I think, internet video, YouTube, woodworking, Mark Spagnolo from The Wood Whisperer. What's going on, Mark?
Not much. I have nothing creepy to say tonight. Not at all. Sorry to disappoint.
Yeah, man. So really happy to have you on, man. It's, you certainly inspired, I think, definitely me. I think probably most people who are on YouTube and woodworking. So it's cool to have you on the show. So,
well, thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man. So I guess let's go ahead and talk about what we're working on. Mark, since you're the guest, you want to start us off?
Sure. Yeah. I just finished up the trestle table build. And so it was a two-part video series, but a much needed table for the family because we just had it. We moved into a new house and it's all these. Actually, I love it because it's a lot of new excuses to build things that just I wouldn't have needed before. So something like this trestle table is a perfect example. It just fit better in the space and makes more sense for us. So the family loves it. And the second video just came out for that today. And the next thing I'm working on is our next guild project, and that is a dining room chair. And I don't know if you guys have ever built a chair, but once you start down that road of like researching all the different things, even just with a simple dining room chair, do you have an upholstered seat? Is it a wood seat? Is the seat on top of the base, or is it sort of embedded in the base? Is it a vertical backslat, or do you have horizontal backslats? And I'm just trying to design this thing so that the most people possible can build it. And I'm just running up against all these walls where I go, well, now that's like a, you know, compound angle. Should we do that, or should I back it down to something else? It's one of those days. Plus, I had a headache today, which doesn't make that stuff any easier. But it really was a pencil and paper day for me for the most part. So that's probably going to be what the next week or so is about, is trying to get to the point that I'm ready to make a prototype for this thing.
Yeah, I've been working on chairs for like 2 months for a guy. They're all metal and wood. And I ended up designing it, right, in SketchUp. And I'm like, okay, we like the way this looks. And then when it came time to get the actual measurements, they were way off. Like the design looked really good in SketchUp.
Yeah.
And turns out the measurements were off. So I had to rescale everything. So I ended up just building a prototype. I just welded it just really quick, welded a bunch of square tubing together, put pins in it so that I could adjust the front, the back, every aspect of it, the armrest height and everything, which is what I should have done first.
Sure.
So then I took it to his place and he sat in it, and we got all the measurements that we needed to get for it. Then I had to go back to SketchUp and redesign it with the proper measurements. And right now I'm finally building the first chair.
There you go.
That's nice. Kind of my, I guess I'm segueing into what I've been working on, because it's kind of the same story. That's what I've been working on. So yeah, chairs are crazy. And I think I said it a few podcasts ago too, is the measurements. You're like,
oh, yeah.
You'll be like, oh, the seat height's 17 inches. And then you hold up a tape measure and you're like, there's no way.
Does it look right?
There's no way. You're like, there's no way you sit this low. This does not look right.
And I'm so not really a big fan of prototyping. It's just I like it. The concept of it is good. I just don't have time for it to build a whole chair and then to build a, you know, six more of them. Like it just isn't in my schedule. But the more I get into this, I'm like, I'm not going to have a choice. Like, I have to build a prototype on this, or else I may wind up having six versions of a chair that I don't really like that much.
Yeah.
You know, and I think a chair is one of those you have to.
Yeah. And the comfort too. I mean, it's not like most furniture, like a table, like if it's flat on top and level.
Yeah. And it doesn't even have to be like that, like, flat, as long as it's mostly flat.
Flat,
you know?
Enough.
If it's flat,
things don't slide around.
And it's level-ish, and it's like within a few inches of where you want it to be, like you're good. And it looks good. That's it. But with a chair, there are so many ways to screw up a chair.
Yes.
Like if your angle is wrong on anything, your backrest angle, if your seat angle, if your armrest angle, if any one of those things are screwed up, aside from just the measurements, you know, it can be chaotic. So, I mean, of all the things that I think mandates prototyping, I think chair is at the top of my list.
Agree.
Yeah.
Mark, I think I saw in the Instagram that you were testing finishes.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah. That's the other thing I'm doing. So I've got a whole bunch of sample pieces of plywood, and I just get a lot of questions about this. And, I'm curious myself. I've used a lot of different finishes, and I seem to go in phases. And I had an armor seal phase in the 80s. And then that's a joke. I wasn't doing anything useful in the 80s. And then, I use water locks for a little bit of time. Now I'm using Minwax wipe on poly. So I kind of use them in a vacuum. And what I wanted to see, even just for myself, almost selfishly, is how these finishes compare in a direct comparison on the same material. So I get a lot of questions about it, too. So I figured it was a good thing to document and just show some real sort of real world testing. A lot of people are like, oh, you got to get this mechanism and do this and put it in this. And I'm like, no, I'm going to put them into the same situations that it would be inside someone's house. You know, I don't necessarily need to put it in, you know, into a furnace and find out if it holds up, because most people aren't putting their furniture in places like that. You know, so I'm going to do a whole round of tests and just see what I see. It's not really, I'm not looking for a winner. I'm just looking for what are the properties of these finishes that might be useful to you, depending on what you're looking for. So that is the other side project.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how that comes out, because I've used most of the finishes you're testing, but never like kind of tried to compare them side by side. And I know like some are a lot easier to apply than others. Like I know I used water locks on, I had like 4 sponsored builds with them, and it's a little tricky to apply. Like, at least in my experience, I was using a foam brush and it wanted to kind of bubble up on the surface. And it took a little, and it was very runny. So it was hard to do on like a vertical piece and that kind of stuff. So I'm interested to see. I've actually never tried Minwax wipe on poly, so I know that's like kind of a classic, but I think I just dove right into armor steel because that seemed to be what everybody was using.
And, it's good stuff though.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, I have a ridiculous amount of it too. So like every time I go to the store, I'm like, oh, what's new that I could try? And then I'm like, I got like 3 gallons of stuff at home that would be fine. So it seems kind of silly. So,
You know, and judging from some of the comments that are coming in, it's interesting too, how still, I mean, this is just the internet. This is how this stuff goes, but there's so much misunderstanding about what these finishes are, what they're made of. And a lot of people are like, oh, you should compare it against, you know, such and such a oil. And it's like, you guys, I'm not looking at oils. I'm looking at wiping varnishes. Yep. And they're like, well, Waterlocks is an oil. I'm like, no, it's not. It's
an oil, it's with oil crap based in it.
But it's basically a wiping varnish, you know, and the marketing on these things is what really makes it confusing, because the more that thing looks like an oil, or we could say it's a hand rubbed kind of finish, the better it sells. So if you call it polyurethane, it doesn't quite sell as well. That doesn't have the cachet of other types of finishes. So they fudge the names. They call it tongue oil finish, and they call it, you know, oil and urethane, you know, but there's no actual oil in there, you know, as far as the final ingredients that are in the can. You know, and that's the other thing I'm hoping to clear up with it.
Yeah, no, that'll be a cool one. Cool. James, what you been working on?
A dresser.
Yes.
Still.
All right, next. This is like the bandsaw. Oh, I saw now, the man. This is like the never ending project.
Actually, I had scheduled the entire week to resaw the bottoms of all the drawers. So I had 26 feet worth of 8-inch boards to resaw.
Yeah.
By hand. And I thought I was going to be at this all day, and it took me about half a day to redo it all. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm done. So I started working on the dressers and on the drawers. So I actually have half of the drawers all glued up, and I should have the others as soon as I come back from a trip. So I might actually get it done early April.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, what else after the drawers is there?
Yeah, after the drawers, I have to do some detail work, cleaning up all the through tenons, hardware, and the top. I haven't quite decided what I want to do with the top yet. We'll see when I get there. But, then finish.
So. Yeah, man. That's going to be awesome. How much is that going to weigh?
Somewhere in the vicinity of 250 to 270.
That's ridiculous, dude.
Yeah, the bottoms dresser are all solid 3/8 inch thick.
Yeah, that's crazy.
The sidewalls are all 3/4.
That's nuts.
Crazy. That is, yeah, that's ridiculous.
Dressers are endurance tests, really. I mean, it's like you look at it, you go, okay, I shouldn't be too bad, right? But it's like everything is times six. You're batching out within one project. They're a pain in the butt.
Yeah, especially when you're hand cutting everything like a crazy person.
Well, that's his fault. I mean,
milling all this lumber with your hands.
Let's be honest.
It's like you're a psychopath. Like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
It sounded good about a year and a half ago.
Seriously, man. That is, yeah, that's crazy. Cool. Well, I've been working on this river table. I'm getting pretty close to putting on finish, so hopefully that should be done. It should definitely be done and out by the time anybody listening to this on iTunes or the feed is hearing it, but it's coming along really well. I was super nervous yesterday. That was when I routed like the actual kind of inset pocket for the glass into the top of the cherry slab. And I was, you know, riding a router bit up against a piece of glass. So that was pretty nerve-wracking, especially since the piece of glass was like $100. So, and, you know, the slab was like $60. So, you know, if anything went wrong, it's like, A, glass is going to explode in my face, and B, like, this whole project pretty much is riding on this one operation. So it worked, and it was super simple. I got a bit just for this. It's like a quarter inch deep by half inch wide template bit, Whiteside, and it worked flawlessly. Yeah, really simple. And then just flushed up the rest of the pocket just with, you know, kind of freehand routing. And yeah, worked really well. And so I've got it. There were a couple little like bug holes and stuff like that. I think like some carpenter bees or something, but I filled those with epoxy and started working on the legs today, which are just going to be really simple, solid walnut, kind of just like a square, like 1 by 3.5 inch pieces, just a square. They're going to be right on the ends and really, really, I think with these river tables, like the key is to keep the base really basic, not to take away from the top. So that's what I'm working on. Use the domino for the legs. So I expect to get all kinds of blowback on that. So that'll be
what a jerk.
That'll be interesting. But man, it's just so easy. I haven't used it in a little bit, and it is so simple. Like I had the whole base done in like, you know, 2 hours. So that was nice.
Did you cut the glass at all? Any part of it?
No, heck no, man. The glass
It's
super wavy. So what I did was,
how do you order like wavy glass?
Yeah. So I bought the slab and then I cut it in half and, you know, turned it around so the live edges were facing in. And then I made basically a cardboard template. So I just kind of traced a Sharpie line on the slab and then kind of cut a piece of cardboard to kind of roughly match that. And that's what I took to the glass shop. And so I used a quarter inch plate glass, so not tempered glass, and it's blue. And like a, you know, transparent blue, and they just cut it right to the template. I mean, it was awesome. Like I dropped off the cardboard template. They cut it. They sanded all the edges, like rounded them over all nice. So because to me, like, I don't know the first thing about working with glass. I didn't want to mess around with, you know, especially the piece of glass before paying for the cutting was like $75. So if I messed it up, like that's just $75 gone and I'd have to wait. It's a special order thing. So I just had them cut it. It was only like $20 to have them do it, and they knew what they were doing, and they had the tools to do it properly. So I just figured, why not let them do it? So I think that was the best choice. I mean, I've seen people do it themselves on some of these. Like, there's an Instructables on the river table that I kind of looked at before starting on this, and they cut it themselves. But most of the ones I've seen that are DIY, it's like, yeah, so I bought a piece of glass, broke the first one, went back and bought another one, and then did it successfully on the second try. So that's what I wanted to avoid. And really, it was all time. That's the biggest thing, because it already took like a week for the glass to arrive and then another week for them to cut it. So I just didn't want that to slow down even more. So, yeah, so it's coming along really nice. I'm excited to have that done. It's been nice to like be building furniture pieces again. I've been doing a lot of like little simple stuff with putting all the dust collection stuff in. It's just been like I haven't wanted to do a lot of big stuff and create a lot of dust without dust collection. So now that it's all dialed in and working properly, it's been really, really nice. I got the Nelson benches out last week. And actually, I had a question for you, Mark, about sure. I built three of these Nelson platform benches. One is for myself, and it's going indoors. It's already done. But the other two are for my mom, and they're going to go outdoors. And I'm planning on using Epiphanes, most likely. Mm-hmm. Have you sprayed that before? Because it's, you know, it's slatted, so getting in between all those slats would be a total pain. So I'm just thinking of spraying it. But I don't know if you have any experience with that.
If you spray it, you're going to have to dilute the hell out of it, because the stuff comes out like corn syrup. It's really thick. So you're gonna have to dilute it substantially to do that. It's certainly possible, but anytime you're spraying oil based, especially if you're looking at those slats, you're gonna have drips and runs. It's gonna be a nightmare. I mean, it can be done, but it's gonna be a nightmare.
Yeah,
so get your brush ready and suck it up.
I know. That's that's what I think I've been kind of concluding after doing some more research. Because the only sparier thing I've used before is the Minwax, the Helmsman, and it's the same deal. Uh-huh. It's like incredibly thick. And but it's worked well, but I haven't had any like projects that have been outside for long enough to really, like, I think I've had one outside for like a year and a half, and it's holding up pretty well. But I know it seems like Epiphanes is like the gold standard, like the finish to apply for outdoor stuff.
It's pretty good, but it can be tough to apply, especially on a project like that.
The other question I had, where do you buy it? Because it doesn't seem like it's not easily available on Amazon. I guess it's there, but it's not sold through Amazon. Like, do you have any places you recommend?
Usually it's a marine supply place, and I'm trying to think of the one. I could probably find it real quick. The one that I usually use.
Marine Depot or something like that?
That sounds like one.
They don't. So that's where I found it, like online, but they don't have one in Asheville. So I'm trying to. Yeah,
I've never been able to find it locally. I've always had to either get it from Amazon or some marine supply place online. I've never found it locally.
Cool. Yeah, I was hoping some of the, like, the high-end woodworking stores in the area would have it, but they have like the McCluskey's or whatever, which is like the other brand, I guess, of sparurethane, but no Epiphanes. So anyway.
Right, yeah.
Cool. All right, well, I guess let's get into the main show topic. So I think this will be particularly poignant for Mark this week, based on some of the health issues that's been plaguing his family. But we're going to talk about balancing our work lives and personal lives and family lives, and kind of how to go about doing that. You know, if we have any tips on that, maybe some things we've struggled with. I know I'm very new to this whole running my own business thing, so it's taken me some time, I think, to figure it out. So I think, who wants to kick us off? I mean, Mark, I guess you've been at this the longest. You want to kind of give it a shot?
Sure. Well, I can give you an example of what, you know, a typical day for me is. And today was a good example of how hard it can be to get things done. But I wouldn't be able to do all of this if I didn't work for myself. It would be impossible otherwise. But I get to take my son to school at about 8:30. We had a doctor's appointment for the baby at 9 o'clock. Then I finally got to come home. It was about 10:30. I started to do the chair design, started to work on that. Last night, had a bunch of problems. My son had a bloody nose and the baby was up throwing up. So I'm totally short on sleep. So I took a nap and woke up, and it was 4:30, time to pick up my son again. So I get to daycare, and his pictures came in because they took pictures last week. And I did promise him, because I'm not above bribing my child to get a result I want. I said, if you smile in the pictures, then I will get you a some kind of a toy or something. So of course we had to go to Toys R Us, but I left my wallet at home. So I had to go home, get my wallet, go to Toys R Us. And then I had to go to Boston Market to get dinner tonight because I had to do a podcast at 6. So then after dinner or after the podcast, then I'm going to put the kids to bed and come back out here and apply another coat of finish at probably around 8:30. So that's kind of how it goes when you have, like, you know, it's not always that bad, but when you have two sick kids and a wife who's sick too, it starts to get a little bit nuts sometimes.
Yeah.
So how much of your time do you actually schedule, or how much of it's just what has to be done now?
Oh, it's all family first. And whatever time is left over, I try to figure out how to work in that time. It's if there's something really important, if there's, you know, like this guesting on a show or something, that is something that gets, we try to lock down and not to, to push things around. Wood Talk is scheduled to record every Monday. We've got a Friday live show that we do every morning. So there are things on the schedule, but, you know, things happen and you got to move stuff around. But everything else is just, I get it done when I can get it done. And I don't typically put work in front of family. That's very rare that I'll do that. It's only if like I'm up against some kind of crazy schedule requirement. But most of the time it's like, all right, do I have time to do this weekend? Because I got to get this done, you know, yeah. And then Nicole will take care of the kids and I'll come into the shop and very guiltily sort of get stuff done. Cause I don't feel good about it when I have to do that.
So how many hours do you think you actually get in the shop a week? Like of actual woodworking time, not actual just like, work? You know, on the computer in the shop.
Oh, geez. Very little. I mean, and it goes in waves, obviously. Like if I'm in the middle of a build of a project, I tend to ignore the computer and I get email just piled up because I just want to focus, you know, and I kind of have tunnel vision on a project. I can't just stop and be like, okay, let's be email guy today. So I tend to, you know, it goes in fits and waves. And right now I'm not really doing project stuff. I'm just kind of applying finish to boards. So it's more of an email video editing phase at this point where it's a little bit more flexible for me to get things done. But, I don't get much time at all. And I think that's one of my biggest challenges as I started this whole thing. Before we had kids, we never expected to have kids. And we would put in, you know, my wife had a regular, you know, day job, but she would help me with the business on the side. But we would put in anywhere from like, you know, 50 to 60 plus hours. And we'd play video games in our spare time. And it was just the two of us. We both loved working and we both loved video games. So we could spend as much time doing both of those things as we wanted. As soon as we had kids, now I was kind of expected to do the same amount of work that I was doing before with, you know, probably half the amount of actual hours to work with. You know, so that was just a big challenge for me running my channel and running a paid membership website as well as a free side of things to make sure that neither of those suffers in that process. And that was just impossible. So, you know, over the years, I've just kind of tried to do my best to keep the free site alive, realizing that it's the paid site that actually pays the bills. But you can't just let it go. Like you have to continue to engage the community and to make as much content as possible. But hopefully people understand it's not because I'm greedy and because I just want to make paid content. It's because I've got a family and I have to focus on the things that make me money first. And then when there's time left, go do these other things. But there literally is just not enough time in the day for me to do everything I want to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it's interesting because my wife and I are, you know, we're kind of in that, I'm 28, so we're kind of getting to that age where it's like, okay, we're going to probably start having kids in the next, like, year or so-ish. And just, you know, having been doing this now, I guess since, like, July 1 was when I quit my day job and transitioned to this. And it's like, I have been working, like, probably 6-plus days a week every week since then. So, you know, I cannot even fathom trying to balance that. And I got a huge amount of respect for, like, yeah, but you and like Bob from I Like to Make Stuff. And I mean, like, guys who are just doing this really successfully and have a bunch of kids running around. It's like just crazy. I mean, like,
it's tricky, man. And here's the worst part is like, even if you go, okay, well, we got the kids figured out tomorrow, like one's going to daycare, the other's going to stay with grandma, whatever your situation is. Just because you have 8 hours to work doesn't mean that's going to be a good productive 8 hours, because chances are you might have been up all night with a baby. You know, it's not like you're going to wake up bright eyed and bushy tailed and grab your coffee and go to work. It doesn't work that way. Sometimes I'll come in the shop and I'm just like, I have no idea what the hell I'm doing. You know, just it's quiet and I just have no idea where to start.
Yeah.
You know, just because the night before was so crazy. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like it's all terrible. My life is great. I absolutely love it. But it does absolutely present challenges.
Yeah. So, Zach, what about you, man? How has it been since you transitioned to this full time? Have you found it difficult to kind of manage your time and, you know, kind of let work lie when it's just, you know, 10 feet away in the garage?
It's hands down the best thing that's ever happened in my life. Like, being working for myself, like I force myself to remind myself how much better my life is now than it was before. You know, like, well, it's 8:30 right now. So I think, well, if I were working my old job, I would have just been getting home about an hour ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think for me, it's really healthy for me to just not take what I have for granted, because it's no matter what you do, it always feels like it's almost too much to handle.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like no matter what your situation is. I mean, I'm sure there's millionaires out there who are stressed out about, you know, ridiculous things that wouldn't even be on our radar. And it's, you know, as far as time is concerned, you know, I work more. There's no question about it. I work more now than I did before.
Oh, yeah.
But I get to work when it's convenient for me, and I get to not work when it's convenient for me. So if I need to go to Atlanta for a woodworking show, I can schedule around that. If I need to be a certain place at a certain time, I can make that happen. And that is,
yeah,
it feels like I don't work as much just because I have that option. I don't have to plan to have to go to the dentist office next month. I don't have to tell anybody about it. I don't have to get a shift covered for it. It's I just don't go.
Yes.
But no, I mean, that having that option, that liberty, has made it my life significantly better. Now I don't have kids, so that's a whole different story. But, you know, as far as, you know, trying to spend some time with my wife and stuff, I try and get in from the shop if I can, usually when the sun comes down. It's just too dark. my lighting is so bad that once the sun starts going down, it's pretty much, that's it for me. But you know what? It's good. Cause I come inside and clean up, and then, you know, we'll watch a movie or do whatever we do. There's not a whole lot else to do in Florida. So usually we eat food, drink beer, and watch TV.
There you go. You bring up a good point, and I think that's the you sort of, everything's relative, right? So whatever your current situation is, whatever's the worst thing is level 10 worst, you know. Yeah, whatever's the best is great. So it's like, even though you're in this great situation that other people look at and are like, man, that's a dream job, mm-hmm, but for you in that situation, you're living in that bubble, and you can actually lose your perspective for it. And I do it all the time. But at the same time, you know, 2 days ago, my son, for instance, I had to bring him lunch, and it was a beautiful day, and there's a park right next to a school. So instead of just being like, oh man, I got to stop working, I got to take lunch to my son, no, I went and had a good time. It was like 20 minutes, and I have the flexibility to go have a great time in the middle of the day with my son at the park. That's fantastic. You can't pay for that kind of experience, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. You ever seen the, was it Tim Hawkins? That's the Worst.
Huh. Mm-mm. No.
Oh, you've got to look that up sometime. He does a sketch about That's the Worst, and it's really a great sketch about the comparison of, well, that's the worst to you. And it's kind of they're at the mall, and they have to wait for their friends before they can go into the mall. And one of them looks at the other and says, oh, this is the worst. And the next thing is this guy trapped in a mine, rocks are crumbling around him, and says, you know, this isn't the worst. If I was at the mall waiting for my friends, that would be the worst.
Yeah. It's all relative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is interesting, cause I have certainly been working way, way harder. I mean, I had gotten to a point in my previous job where it was kind of like, I don't know. I was kind of passing the time, you know, like I knew how much work I could get done and kind of get away with that amount of work. It wasn't really fulfilling, and I was kind of doing this stuff on the side. So like every moment I could steal away, and I worked from home, so like every moment I could kind of steal away from the day job, I did. And it was a very surreal thing. Like I thought when I quit, I was like, man, I'm going to have so much time. It's going to be ridiculous. Like I can do all these things and, you know, like have all, like put out so many videos, and like, it just has not been the case, because I mean, all this stuff takes such a long time. And especially when you try to do this stuff, like the right way, there's so many, you know, like the day I post a project, like I'm sitting in front of the computer for like 6 hours trying to get, you know, the blog post and the video and the instructables and all the social media and email newsletter. And just there are so many little odds and ends. And like you can try to automate a lot of that stuff, but then I also think it's kind of a double-edged sword, because it loses that kind of, you know, personal feeling. Like you can tell when stuff is automated, you know, it's very
automated
obvious.
And cross-posting never really works that well.
No. So... Yeah, it's tough. I mean, and you know, I've worked, I think, pretty much every Saturday since I quit, for the most part, just because it just seems like project video goes out Tuesday, and it's like, okay, well, this has to have at least one coat of finish applied before I shoot, like, the final pictures, you know? So it's interesting. But it is so, like, so lucky that I get to do this for a living, because, as you guys have been saying, like, you can just, you know, make your life work with what you're doing in such a way that, like, having a regular day job, it never was possible. And it's pretty amazing. But I think one of the things I struggle with the most is, since we are kind of a audience facing personality, kind of turning off the, like, social media side and you know, like, trying to step away from that, especially, like, at night if we're, like, watching TV or whatever, like, trying not to be on my phone just responding to comments or whatever. That's a real struggle. Like, and it's,
well, how about at dinner? I mean, are you guys have your phones out at dinner?
I very much try not to. My wife would probably say I definitely do, but I very much
try. The table is a no phone zone.
Yeah.
You got it on your lap.
I'm like, hey, just like, yeah, no, babe, definitely.
I'm eating my dinner right now. So I don't know what that says.
Yeah.
There you go.
I mean,
if that says anything.
Yeah. That's the hardest thing, I think, for me, because we're just so connected and there's so many platforms to try to keep up with.
The line between work and fun and family is a kind of a gray line. At, you know, what point are you surfing Facebook and talking with friends, and what point are you responding with people on Facebook?
It's crazy. I mean, we're all old enough here to remember, like, pre-cell phone world.
Yes.
I think, like, you guys remember, like, writing down directions
I remember printing MapQuest. I mean, even that
before MapQuest.
Yeah,
like, I remember having to write things, and, like, the directions that you used to get, they're like, you're gonna pass a road that has four gas stations, and then, like, 3/4 of a mile on your right side, there's a tree that got struck by lightning. The second road after that, take a left. And then there's going to be a red barn, like, stuff, you know. Yes. Those were directions.
Yeah.
And, like, I actually, just this week,
James still lives in that world.
I was without my phone for about an hour, and I couldn't go anywhere. I was waiting for my car to be done, and there was no TV in the waiting room. And there were no magazines or anything like that. And I didn't have my phone. It was like, I've got to sit here for an entire hour. What do I do?
Yeah. Yeah.
How long ago was it? That wasn't even a...
I remember getting a flat tire once and having to run, like, 3 miles to get to a phone to, like, call home. And my sister was on the dial-up internet, so nobody answered the phone. I like, called my home. And it was like, the old, like, internet noise.
She was on AOL. Man, yeah. It
back on topic. I actually got into woodworking because of the family. I mean, I've been doing woodworking before, but the reason I got back into it with hand tools was because I became a stay-at-home dad, and I wanted to have something I could do around the kids.
Yeah,
and I wasn't gonna, you know, get a table saw and build a shop in the garage with that. Because, you know, I had 3 kids in 3 years, and the hand tool woodworking was, it's quiet, it's safe, there's less dust, and I could actually have the kids in the shop with me. And so that's kind of my biggest thing about work balance, is I try to make the kids part of it. And so 50 to 60% of the time I'm in the shop, the kids are there with me. Hmm. And my office space is in the living room, so the kids can be coloring on their benches and things right behind me. Now that's nice, but then that makes it very gray in between what is family time and what is work time.
Yeah, that's tricky.
I have to be very, very careful of that, because it's so easy to just get wrapped up into it. Because, you know, I can have them in the shop and I can have fun, and I completely forget about what all is going around.
Yeah.
See, and for me, there's an emotional component to this as well. And I found one of the worst things that I do is I might check, I don't know, YouTube comments, because I'm, you know, a glutton for punishment. But I might check a YouTube comment, and then my son will do something. And this will be, like, on, you know, on a couch in the living room, and he'll go to interact in some way. And maybe it's a little bit annoying, but I find that I'll overreact because I'm actually angry at something I just read. And I lash out on my kid, and I'm just like, whoa, 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 that is not cool. I need to put this phone down. Like, I'm either dad right now or I'm, you know, working. And and the two, I can't mix them for me.
Yeah.
Even shop time. And of course, I do have all the power tools and stuff like that. I wouldn't trust turning my back to my son while he's in here with me. So I'm either doing something with him or I'm working. I can't combine the two. And even just doing stuff on my phone, I just emotionally, it feels like a really negative thing for me.
Yeah, that's one of the.
I mean, it's kind of off topic, but just with the cell phone usage. It's just the interesting thing to, I mean, my wife and I, we go out to dinner and a while ago, like we saw a couple and literally the whole time, I mean, this is a cliche, but this really happened. Like there was a couple that would take a bite. They're both essentially, to make a long story short, they were on their cell phone the whole time and we didn't ever see them speak to each other. Like they would pick up their cell phone, do their thing, put it down, eat, pick up their cell phone. It was like
they were texting each other. This salmon is delicious.
Could be.
Maybe they're mutes. You don't know, man. You just don't know.
I don't know. I don't know. But it's just, I mean, it's kind of a bummer. It's just, it gave me some perspective, I guess. And I think to a certain extent, we're all guilty of that. I'm not trying to say they're terrible people, but I'm not that bad, but I'm certainly could be a lot better than I am. One of the things that we do is we just set aside like 10 minutes a night where we put everything away, like no computers, no TV, no cell phones, and just talk. Yeah, like 10 minutes. And usually it'll turn into like a really deep conversation that lasts like 30 minutes. And well, who knows what we'll talk about. But I would encourage anybody who doesn't do that to try it for a week. It's a good way to connect to people with all the crap that we always have going on around us. It's actually really refreshing to have a meaningful conversation where people are actually looking at each other. So
yeah, it's a good idea.
Anyway,
yeah, I actually schedule family time in because I live and die by my calendar. If it's not on the calendar, I don't do it, but I'll actually schedule in, you know, date with my wife, spend time with my daughter, send time with JJ and make that part of my plan, as opposed to when I get time, I'll do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good idea. Like I've started doing that with phone calls because I think the biggest thing when I transitioned from working like in an office to working from home is when I had that commute, I would find myself calling people more because I had time in the car. But then I started working from home and I found myself just not calling people because, you know, like I didn't have that time where there was kind of nothing else to do, as bad as that might sound. But so like now I have kind of like weekly standing calls with like my brother or my mom or like people like I want to keep up with on a weekly basis. And I think some people think that that's like stifling or I don't know, it's going to make it just kind of feel like a chore, but I've found it just makes you stay way more connected because, you know, you actually remember to do it instead of just being like, yeah, when I get around to it, you know? Cause that's, I think when you're super busy, that's to me like the biggest thing that falls by the wayside is like keeping up with people because that's just, you know, that's the thing that's not a necessity as much, you know, like it like doesn't have to happen. And, but it's one of the things that definitely should happen. So, that's been very helpful for me. Going back to what you were saying, the 10 minutes, like no phone stuff, like that's kind of what we try to do with dinner. Like I do try to keep my phone away and, you know, we try to sit at the kitchen table and actually eat dinner. And, you know, I think we got in a bad habit of sitting in front of the TV and watching dinner or not watching dinner.
eating TV and watching
eating
dinner.
TV. Yeah. Which, you know, like, I don't know. That's just really counterproductive to me. Like,
I think I always have to have noise going when people are eating food because if I can hear, even by myself, I cannot sit in a room and eat food without noise because the sound of myself chewing food, like, instantly makes me angry. Like, I don't know what's psychological condition I have.
My wife is the same way, man. She cannot stand hearing me. I'm like, I'm sorry, nourishing my body is offensive to you.
Anybody, like I said, even listen, there's a name like, for if that. I can hear myself chewing, I get pissed off. It's ridiculous. Yeah. Like there's something going on. I just can't listen to people chew food. So without like a TV or something, there has to be like a white noise.
I get that. A little bit of music or something in the background.
Something. And then, you know, then after that, we can turn the TV off and have our conversation, but no way. No way.
Misophonia is evidently what that's called.
It's, oh, really?
Really?
Yeah.
There's a thing for it, huh? Yes. Not just weird.
Yes. Nice. Literally, hatred of sound was proposed in 2000 as a condition. Yeah. That's funny, man. Yeah. I've heard that before from a number of people. So, yeah, I guess
I don't really notice it,
but yeah.
Yeah, I have a couple of weird hang-ups. Like, I can't stand people walking behind me, like hearing people's footsteps behind me. I freak out. Like, I have to walk over to the side and let them walk by me. I don't know. I looked for that condition because I've never heard anybody else that has it. So if somebody else has that, let me know. I don't want to be alone anymore.
So do you guys, I know Mark, you've kind of already answered this, but do you, Zach and James, do you guys have like a set kind of work schedule that you kind of try to adhere to? Like are you done at like 5:30 or 6 every day? Like you try to shoot for that, or does that just kind of ebb and flow?
Well, for me, it's whenever, because my wife's schedule is, she works 3 days a week, and there's different 3 days every week, and so it's always a mix and match. Usually, I do the most in the shop when I only have one child at home because the other two are at school. But other than that, there are a lot of times where my wife just wants to do things with the kids, and so I'll disappear to the shop, or there are just other things that go on that make it this is a good shop time, and so those are. It's very random in my house, but in most weeks it's 50 to 60 hours either at the computer or down the shop.
Yeah. Yeah. That's about right. Zach, I guess you said when the sun goes down, so.
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, it's not always like that, but it's pretty rare that I'm out there for much longer than, you know, when the sun goes down.
Yeah.
I wake up pretty early though. So yes, I can still get a good amount of shop, even in the middle of winter, I can still get quite a few hours down cause I wake up pretty early. But, as far as like the schedule goes, I usually have that mapped out the night before. Like I'll think about like, okay, what would I like to get done tomorrow? Like what would I call a good day? Like if I can get all the legs welded up on these chairs and you get all of that leveled and the seat pan welded up, that's a good day. Anything beyond that, like bonus. But that way I think it's important though to set some sort of goals, whether it's off the cuff like I do. I mean, the day before or something, just knowing what you would like to get done. Make it reasonable. And then you get that sense of accomplishment at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you don't know what you're planning to get done, then you really can't get a good sense of satisfaction by accomplishing it.
And I am so bad at that, man. I am so bad at estimating how long it's going to take me to do a thing. Like, I don't know why. I have a struggle with that. Like my wife, whenever I tell her like, oh yeah, I'm going to go out and do this thing in the shop, it'll probably take an hour. She doubles it every single time, like right off the bat. And, it usually ends up more correct. Yeah, it's
see, I don't even bother with hours anymore. Seriously, even for my jobs, like when I do mostly commission work, everything in my head is days.
Yeah.
Like I don't care. Mm-hmm. I break everything into days. It doesn't matter what it is. It's you know, it's going to take me a day to mill the top down for the table. It's going to take me a day to do all the finishing on the top.
I'm a hand tool guy. I go by weeks.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Totally.
You go by
millennia.
Fortnite.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
I don't even, what is a fortnight? Is that like
2 weeks?
2 weeks? Yeah. I always forget that.
Yeah. Man. Cool. Well, I think that probably wraps up the main topic. I think unless you guys... Guys, got anything more to add?
Kids suck. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes, avoid having children. That's the moral of today's show.
Yeah, if you want to hear more about that, watch the video I put out today. Well, okay, to be last Thursday to you listening to it. I started the video with, Arthur, stop flushing the toilet.
Other day I even posted a picture on Instagram of this. I had a couple of boards that I was kind of trying to speed cure, so I put them in the driveway so they're in direct sun. And yes. I pick my kid up from school and I'm like, all right buddy, look, there's finishes in the can over there, don't spill those, and you see those boards, please don't step on them. I'm trying to dry them. He's like, why not? It's just don't step on him. And I don't even know when he did it because I walked with him in the house. But somehow the next day I go to look at those boards and I'm like, damn it, there's a footprint in the stupid board.
Yeah,
he's such a little turd.
That was awesome.
It was great.
I forgot to earlier in the show, since I jumped, like, segued off of Mark's, what we've been working on. I didn't get to mention my the Irish flag thing that I built this week that I was super excited about.
Oh yeah,
that I don't was know if you guys saw that video or not. Oh, that yeah. was that was a lot of fun. I got to do a lot of new
love the ivy work.
Yeah, new stuff on there. Yeah,
the blacksmithing stuff was cool, man. I think that is that's a nice thing to have added to your videos. You know, like it's a there's not many people who are doing that kind of level of that in our space, at least. So that's a cool thing to add.
It was a lot of fun. I think it might be, I think it might be my favorite build yeah. that I've done yet. Personally, it was just, a lot of different elements. I think yeah. the only thing I didn't get to do on that one was leather work, but I got to do that on the anvil stand. So the branching out thing, no pun intended, has been a lot of fun.
Well, there was a lot of like organic stuff too, I think, on the flag build, and I've started to find that that's kind of a nice, refreshing change of pace when I've like this live edge slab, like shaping the edge of that, like not trying to make something square or rectangular, you mm-hmm. know, and trying to make it perfect, like you doing the leaves and that kind of stuff, like just pounding metal into shape, you know, and like it's done when you think it looks good, basically.
I have the most fun doing that, because I mean, I feel like perfecting things, I mean, you should be able to do that. It's like music theory and scales, like learn them and then forget them, you know. Yeah. Like that's where the creativity comes in, like obviously develop the skill set to be able to do perfecting work, but then go crazy and have fun with it. Yeah. And most of the designers and stuff that I really admire are people that kind of do stuff a little bit different, and that's what, you know, I have kind of this overarching theory that in life tension is what makes things interesting. It's the same, you know, and that a good analogy with that is music, but in so many things, I mean, it's that tension. It's that thing that isn't quite right. I mean, if, whether it's art or whatever it is, like sometimes that's what will like, yeah, that's what'll grab my attention is if I look at something, there's something that's like wrong or slightly uncomfortable or somewhat unsettling, or it really, instead of just passing it by and being like, oh, it's something that you go, wait a minute, that's weird, like what's going on there, that's mm-hmm. uncomfortable. And that's, to me, like that's art, and I think it's kind of fun to try and figure out how to incorporate that into the builds. Like I think Paul Jackman did that table a while ago.
Oh yeah,
that had like one of the yeah. one sides of the legs were leaning, and I'm like, slanted. That is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just enough to where like, you can't not notice it.
Yeah.
I don't care if you don't know anything about furniture, you're going to walk by that and you're going to go, two of those legs are crooked.
Yeah.
But that second, like it wouldn't have gotten that attention if it were run of the mill, you know? So varying degrees of tension, you know, however much you want, but I like to try and incorporate elements of that into what I build.
Yeah. So, cool.
I'm done babbling.
Well, I guess let's move into our Q&A. So we've got one kind of a funny one from JD Chambers from Rainfall Projects, one of my favorite YouTube channels, in case you guys haven't checked him out. Definitely go watch his stuff. So it says, age-old question woodworkers have been asking themselves for millennia. Does a longer, skinnier board go on the bottom of the wood stack or a wider, shorter one? So I don't know. What do you guys think? I would tend to go wide.
Has more board feet.
Yeah.
But if they're the same board feet, then go with option B.
Yeah. I think that makes for more stable wood.
I would
stack.
Go with I'd go with two stacks myself.
Wait, who's laying boards down? Shouldn't they be stood up against the wall?
No. Who does that?
Not me.
Heathens. All right, cool.
See, there's a lot of tension in that question.
Yeah, seriously.
I don't have a good answer.
It's a little bit of an odd question, frankly.
Definitely an odd question. I think you knew it was an odd question.
Well, see, and it's so odd that we're going to be thinking about it tonight when we go to sleep.
It's like a chicken or the egg, you know? That's like a conundrum. It's like
the same board feet, and you must lay them flat. Which one goes first?
Yes. Cool. We got another one from Evan from the live chat. So he's asked if we have any design tips to help create projects that are easy to batch out but don't look overly batched out. So that's a tricky one. I mean,
what looks overly batched out? Like what what would qualify as looking batched out?
Yeah.
IKEA.
I mean, I think of like crafty stuff personally, like all the bottle openers and like, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like that just screams batched to me, like perfect rectangles, you know, like no real shaping, all the same identical roundovers. You know what I mean? Like when they all look identical to me, like I think that would be one thing, like try to make a product that you can make things slightly different on each one, you know, like
when every corner has a quarter inch roundover on it.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, have one corner that doesn't have a roundover.
Use hand tools. I mean, I think that's that's a great way to make it not.
I made one dresser and all 10 drawers are different.
Yeah.
Good luck with the batching part of that.
Yeah. Seriously.
I think the key. Go ahead.
I was going to say the key is probably to not design for batching. And if you're, you know, pencil and paper, you're ready to go. I'm going to design the best looking, I don't know, cutting board or something that's sellable. If you're designing specifically to make a batchable product, you're going to end up with something that looks like a batched product.
Yep.
If you design something that's great and then try to figure out how to make that batchable, you're probably going to end up with something a little bit better.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I mean,
you can always make a jig or a template to duplicate something.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it also depends on what the specific piece is. But, you know, for instance, a cutting board, like there's a different mentality, at least for me, when I build something for the first time. Usually it's like I look around the shop and I'm like, what do I have? What can I build this with?
Yes.
Like, okay, I have some, I've never made a cutting board, but if I'm like, okay, I have some cherry wood, I have some walnut. Then, you know, I'll end up with a cherry and walnut cutting board. Whereas if you're in the mindset of batching something out, then you're going to go to the store and buy a ton of walnut and cherry, and every single cutting board is going to be walnut and cherry. You know, if you kind of go ad lib on whatever the project is, and especially the materials, I think different materials will, you know, it's a good way to mix things up.
Yeah, that's why I like those kind of chaotic style boards. Like I built one of those over Christmas, or actually three of them. And like I know Matt Cremona does a lot of them, but every one's going to look a little different, you know, because it's just basically pulling from scraps. But I think you could apply that mentality to a lot of things and, you know, make everyone slightly different. I think, I mean, working with anything live edge, obviously you're going to get that more organic element. So you could make the same live edge coffee table 100 times, but it's not going to look the same ever, most likely, because everyone's going to have that little bit of a unique character. So, I don't know if that answers your question, Evan, but I think that's what we got. All right, so the corny joke of the week, it just keeps coming, man. Just refuses to die.
Great, keep them coming.
Yes, Matthew Bunton, this is his corny joke of the week. So why was the pine board put in timeout? Because it was too knotty.
Oh, that's great.
Man, yeah, this is...
By the way, your Spreaker photo is hilarious, Mark.
Oh, which one is it? What did I log in with? Gmail, I think.
Yeah.
So what is... Am I wearing a cowboy hat?
Yes.
Yeah, sombrero and a awesome mustache and a bandana. It's really
that
good.
Was the rocking chair charity build, and I was riding a rocking horse, so I had to get into the proper attire to do that.
That's perfect.
Awesome. That's awesome. Cool. Well, I guess let's move into what we've been kind of watching or reading or whatever into learning about. So I'm gonna go first this week, actually. So I've been researching the crap. I want to get a pellet smoker now that it's getting kind of warmer, and you know, I just joined this sweet meat CSA, so it's like this local meat thing, and it's all, you know, like grass-fed beef and pastured chicken and pork and stuff. So I've been like just diving down the YouTube rabbit hole of pellet smoker, you know, reviews and stuff like that, and amazingribs.com and stuff. So I know, Mark, you're pretty into the barbecue thing, right?
Yeah, I am. Yes. So.
Yeah. Have you tried any pellet smokers? Is that something you've played around with?
You know, it's the one type of smoker that I haven't tried.
Yeah.
I've got like everything else. I've got an electric smoker. I've got a Kamado grill for more traditional smoking. I've got my, what do you call it, gas grill.
Yeah.
I have not. And they're great. I mean, I hear great things about them, and like Traeger units and stuff that people have. They just absolutely love them, but I haven't gotten into it myself.
Yeah, that's like, to me, the whole kind of set it and just leave it be aspect is what's so appealing to me. You know, like I just especially, you know, as we've all been talking about this whole episode, is like time is such a valuable resource. And I'm the cook in our household. Like, my wife doesn't really cook. So I'm the one responsible for, you know, putting dinner on the table at night. So the idea of being able to like start a piece of meat, like when I'm drinking my coffee in the morning, and having it be ready right around dinner time would be pretty sweet. So, I think the Camp Chef brand is the one that I have landed on. I think it's like the same exact price as the Traeger, but it's got all kinds of bells and whistles that the Traeger doesn't have. It seems way better designed.
Oh, cool.
So, I'm pretty excited. I've got one of those little, the Tapiq, the wireless, Wi-Fi thermometer temperature probe thing. So, that'll be pretty nifty too. So, yeah, I'm excited to get into that. That'll be fun. I mean, I'm a little bummed that I can't use any of my kind of offcuts for that, you know, because obviously
I think that might be the reason. Yeah. That might be the reason why I haven't gotten into it, is because I do want the ability, whether I'm using the electric or, you know, the Kamado grill, I could still use my scraps. I got a ton of cherry from this last project that absolutely is getting chopped up into small pieces for the grills. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's and I still have a, you know, a charcoal smoker, and so I could I can do that still, because I have a huge pile of scraps that needs to be something done with it right now. So, have you, like, does walnut, is it that good for smoking?
I have never heard of anyone using walnut. I don't think it would be like dangerous necessarily, but I have never heard of walnut smoked anything. Yeah.
Sounds expensive.
Well, I have, I use a lot of walnut. So, and you know, you end up with these little pieces, and like the stuff I bought was, you know, is air dried and just like sawn by some random dude in the middle of nowhere here in North Carolina. So there's a lot of like, you know, bark edges and a lot of sapwood and that kind of stuff, and just knots and areas that I can't even use for like cutting boards or anything like that, you know. So they're just gonna be burnt in some way. So yeah, I didn't know if that would make for a good barbecue or not. That would be interesting. I might have to try.
Just did a quick Google. Someone says that walnut is good for smoking, usually mixed with another wood because it can be a little bit strong.
Huh.
So probably like mesquite and things like that might be a little bit too heavy depending on what you're smoking.
A bit of cherry.
Yeah, that would be good.
Cool.
All right, well, who wants to go next?
Well, I've actually been watching Northmen. It's a channel I've been watching for a long, long time, but they just changed the name to Northmen. And a while ago, he frame built a house from the trees on the property. The plaster was from supplies on the property. It was thatched from supplies on the property. Absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous work. But he just put out a video on a dugout canoe that was absolutely mind-blowing. I've watched the thing probably 5 or 6 times now, and it is just a phenomenal, phenomenal video. Not only in the video work and the fun of the woodworking, but just in the creative things. Every time they start moving on to the next step, it's just mind-blowing of, oh, you can do that. That's really cool. Just putting the entire dugout canoe in the lake to absorb it and then bending it over top of a fire, it was a seriously cool video.
Yeah.
I don't find videos that often that get me that excited. And that was one of them.
Yeah, that sounds cool. I've never heard of that, so I'll have to check that out. Zach, I see you got something written down.
I do. So if you guys are not aware, there's a big woodworking show in Atlanta coming up soon. I don't know the dates, like the first of next month or
March
something like that.
31st through April. Yeah. First or second.
Those are the ones. And there's a pretty impressive list of content creators, YouTube people that are going to that show. So I am trying to, I unfortunately don't really watch a whole lot of YouTube. But I've been trying to go down the list and watch a few videos from each person so that I have some idea who these people, I mean, I don't want to sound like I don't know who any of them are, but I'm trying to acquaint myself with some of these people.
Jimmy DiResta that people keep talking about? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I've heard of him a few times, I think. No, but there's so many, great, people there. I want to be familiar with, who they are and what they do, and, being able to put faces with names would be fantastic.
Yeah.
So I've been kind of going down the list of the attendees there and checking out their YouTube channels.
Cool.
And, finding out there's a lot of talent that's going to be there.
Oh yeah.
That's dude. And don't feel bad. I've been doing this for over 10 years and I hardly watch anything. I mean, I know who a lot of these people are. You know how many the rest of the videos I've actually watched all the way through? One.
What?
And it's nothing against the guy. I just don't watch this stuff. Again, this goes back to the whole family thing. If I want to create as much content as I need to create, I have so little time to sit there and watch other people do it. And as talented as these people are, the only time I'll watch something, if someone goes, hey, check this out. So-and-so did this, go look at it. And I'll go, okay, that's pretty cool. And then I'll move on and I'll hit subscribe because I want to support people and be one of the subscribers. But man, I just don't have time to watch all this stuff. And it's exploded in how many people there are.
Oh, yeah.
Because you got to remember, in 2006, I could count the number of people on one hand who were trying to do what I was doing.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, there's just an insane amount of talent out there. I can't keep up with it. So I honestly just, I'm really bad. I'm probably one of the worst in this community about actually watching other people.
I feel good because I feel like I'm pretty bad too. And it's not like for the same reason. It's not, I used to watch a ton. Like before I started doing this, I would binge all day. Like when I was working a day job, like my lunch breaks, I'd come home and it was like, I felt like I was like almost vicariously doing work by watching these people's videos. And I learned a ton. Like it's probably the best resource that I ever had for learning to do the stuff that I'm doing now is watching other people do it. But honestly, I mean, I eat, breathe and sleep this stuff. So like, when I come in from the shop and eat dinner and my wife gets home from work, like I feel like I don't want to watch other people do what I just spent 9 hours doing.
That's where I'm at, man. Totally agree. I'd rather come in and play a video game or watch, you know, something one of my other hobbies that I'm into.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Probably about a dozen channels that I watch everything they put out, but most everything else, I'll see it come up in the list. I'll look at it. And if the name intrigues me, I might watch it, but most of the time, I just like knowing what all is happening. If there's something that, you know, every channel is doing something, I might think about doing a video on that.
Like the polka music challenge.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Like the concrete USB hub that, that was annoying how many of those came out. I was like, enough.
Enough. I never saw any one of those.
Yeah.
Let me ask you guys this too, from a creative perspective. I don't mean to derail the conversation, but do you ever find that watching so much other stuff, other people being what appears to be super productive, the reality is everybody's doing their own thing, but taken on the whole, if you just scroll through your Facebook feed or you're looking at, you know, your subscriptions on YouTube, if you just look at it on the whole, it can actually, and I've heard this from other people, have a little bit of a negative effect where you go, man, I'm not doing anything. These people are so productive and I'm doing nothing. But what you're doing is actually taking them all as a lump sum instead of realizing that each one of those people is on their own journey and they're doing a certain amount of realistic productivity. But I find that the more I look at the stuff, I actually walk away a little bit depressed because I go, damn, I'm really slacking here. You know, I feel like I'm busting my butt, but clearly I'm not getting anything done.
I don't have as much of an issue with that one. I used to, but because I put out 3 videos a week, I always feel like I'm putting out too much.
See, but you're the problem for me.
Yes. I'm the one who
right?
He's who you're like, talking I'm lucky, about, James.
I'm lucky to get a video out a month, and then I see people doing multiple videos a week, and I'm just like, I'm lazy is what this comes down to.
But your projects are way over.
My quality isn't up there because I'm putting out so much.
I don't know. For me, I feel like I'm still in such the learning phase with all of this that it still very much serves as inspiration and just learning stuff. I mean, like the little just it's the little tricks you pick up by watching, you know, random build videos that like, I don't know, just ways of doing things differently. And it's I just, you know, I've really only been woodworking for, I mean, less than 2 years, really. So It's it's all still very new to me. So
there's a wealth of information out there. It's pretty amazing.
It is incredible. And you know, I've gone to a few like paid classes, and I think I've come home disappointed sometimes because it's like, man, like I feel like I've learned a lot more for free on the internet. And then like, you know, if you add on top of that, like paid content, like, you know, I've bought a number of the guild projects, and it's like, there's so much info in there for, you know, like $40, yeah. $50, you know, it's like, okay.
And you can learn at your speed rather than the slowest person in the class.
Exactly.
Speed.
I can watch the video like 17 times on, you know, the stupid detailed Rubo stuff that like just continues to intimidate me. So, yeah. Yeah. Anyway. So, Mark, I see you added yours, and that's funny. I almost added that. I had him a couple months ago. He amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just, you know, because again, I don't really watch this stuff, but someone said, hey, Mark, check out this trestle table since you just made one. And I said, well, damn, that's way better than mine. And it's the Ishitani Furniture channel on YouTube. And I wasn't, you know, just because I'm not aware of these things, I wasn't aware of it, but I am subscribed now. And it's just one of those video series that's just a pure pleasure to watch for the joy of crafting things. And I've only watched about three of the videos at this point, but man, absolutely gorgeous furniture, great workmanship, and just a pleasure to watch. Really good, you know, cinematography or whatever you would refer to that for YouTube, but great video work on it. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, he is absolutely incredible, and I just love his style, and it's soothing. It's very, very soothing.
It is.
Like, I'll watch it like laying in bed sometimes because you don't need the sound. Like there's no talking. There's, you know, it's like tool noises. You know, it's like I know what those tools sound like, so I don't need the sound on. And man, it's like the most.
There's
relaxing.
A simplicity to the a simplicity to that presentation that is absolutely therapeutic almost to watch. Yeah.
And the occasional like just kind of environment, like lifestyle shot that like of the dog or like him walking around, or, you know, it's like it just all adds to that. Like, man, this is the way life should be as a woman.
It makes you want to be there.
Yeah, seriously, man, he is.
I love your dog hug break.
Oh yeah, that was awesome.
I was like, I got to remember to do that. I mean, that's one of the things that like I loved about doing what we do and the tying in the family to make them a part of it and make them. Yeah. I mean, people have seen my kids. They knew me well before I had kids. They saw when they were born and they're watching them grow up now. You know, it's the same thing with the pets and stuff like that. Why not bring them into the video for a couple of seconds if they're around?
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Love it.
Well, we're running pretty long, so I'm thinking maybe we skip the favorite tool of the week and move that to next week, and then we can go right into the kind of after
36 thing. Count Sharpie box, Amazon, $17.
I'll save mine for next week because I want to talk about it because I really enjoyed using it. So, cool. All right. Well, that is going to do it for this week's show. So thanks to everybody for listening. I apologize for any of the issues with the live chat. Hopefully Spreaker will get their act together for next week. And until next time, happy listening and happy building, everybody.
Bye-bye.
See ya.